All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, February 28th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
The birthday boy.
I was going to wish you a happy birthday. You didn't have to wish yourself
happy
birthday.
No, you didn't. You forgot it was my birthday.
No, we talked about it off the air. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go on over, DFSR.com/NBA. To go check out a free 3-day trial, our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Yeah, for James' birthday, we'll give it away for 3 days, and then just $34.95.
I'm going to give everyone a present for my birthday. That's a birthday power move. Just let people know it's your birthday before they have a chance to wish you a happy birthday, and then you have a little leverage over them. You know, subconsciously, they feel a little bit indebted to you, then they'll give you anything.
I don't think that's going to turn out the way you think it's going to turn out. But I do have a question for you.
It's my birthday.
Over under how many comments you get today from people about your birthday being on leap year? Like, I know that you get the February 28th. It's not on leap year, obviously, but it's so close that some people think that it is.
The big joke that I've heard every single birthday multiple times for my entire life, I guess less so now that I'm an adult and don't spend time with anyone, is one more day later, that would have been it. I'd be like, well, let's just go down what would have been it, okay, just for starters. First of all, 1982, the year I was born, was not a leap year, so I would have been born on March 1st. That's the for starters. And let's heaven forbid there was a February 29th that year, then my birthday would be February 29th. I wouldn't actually be 7 right now, you know? I wouldn't be like a little kid walking around me,
aging
super slow.
I don't know about you. You'd be like that guy.
Just like super concerned, yeah.
You'd be like Jack from that Robin Williams movie when Jack was like, he's looking super old and then still like in first grade and creeping everybody out. No, but I do know you get the joke, so hopefully, I'm going to say you get it 2.5 times just because you're in a public place today with other people that you know. So
no one's gonna know it's my birthday. I keep it pretty mum these days. So
all right, here,
I'm gonna go ahead on zero. I'm going on zero outside of your comment about it. So we'll
all
see.
Right, we're gonna talk I think a 10 games slate of basketball here for Wednesday. About typical size, you would say, because you know most Wednesdays do feature the most games of the week, Wednesdays and Fridays. Sometimes we get up to 12 games, so maybe two less today. Some interesting considerations to make here, and I'm actually glad this game is first because I want to talk about Blake Griffin. So we have Milwaukee and the Pistons going. Pistons minus two favorites, Milwaukee on the back-to-back after last night's game. So Blake Griffin the other day was a guy that we actually roster very, very low owned in cash games. Ended up being sort of a price play more than anything else at a power forward position that just left a lot to be desired. So it wasn't – I stared at the lineup. The lineups I was running, I didn't – love that Griffin was there. I sort of understood it on like a nuts and bolts level and was pretty unexcited because he's the kind of guy you kind of just don't, especially from like a user base, you just don't want to be on the wrong side of. Anyway, we get to the third quarter and Griffin has zero, he's playing horrible. He's got zero rebounds. So I actually went back and looked. When was the last time he actually had zero rebounds in a game? And it turns out.
So you're scrolling, you're like switching the little tab, the radio button.
Our database
like,
only
okay,
goes
2013, 2014.
Our strict database only goes back 3 years. And so there was none there. So then I had to go back and actually go through the game logs. Okay. Like for the first query is easy. It was like the previous 5 years that were tough. Anyway, the long story short, mystery solved. It was zero. He had never had
Griffin skies over Ibaka gets a rebound. He did get a rebound.
Well, yeah, I actually started sweating it because I actually wanted to be the guy. At this point, I'm like, well, the lineups are stunk anyway, so whatever. I want to be the time that the roster Blake in the time that he plays a full run of minutes and doesn't get a rebound. But he grabbed one lonely rebound. Now, the reason I bring him up, though, is because he's been pretty bad over the last three or so games, and he's now down to 7,600 on FanDuel, which in our chat room the other day we were kind of joking about, you know, Blake's going to get down to like the mid 7,000s, and then we're going to probably just have to make another decision on him now. So the question is,
looking forward to that discussion.
Well, that's the discussion right now. So at 7,600, he's been horrible the last three games. Now, the Toronto's a bad matchup. Charlotte theoretically is a fine matchup. And Boston, I guess, let's say, is a kind of ranks as a bad matchup. And then we have to go really back to the Atlanta game where he put up any semblance of value. And even then, he was kind of scraping up there. What are we doing with him? The rebounds, the one rebound, while, you know, an outlier, he wasn't really rebounding that well. He really hasn't rebounded. He's got one double-digit rebound game in the last month, basically. What do we think about Griffin here? If he shows up in lineups here, and I have a feeling he's going to, just because of this price and maybe some of the pedigree, I feel all at once like this could be a great value, and all at once like this could be just a ship sinking. I'm not sure.
Well, so there's two parts that I feel about our projection on him right now. I do feel like our projection's too aggressive. We got him for more than 40 fantasy points. That does seem to be a little bit on the strong end. You know, it could perhaps not be accounting for his new role in LA, or in Detroit rather. And I feel like he's a must play. The price is simply too cheap. It's a good matchup with Milwaukee. Milwaukee doesn't really feature a lot of, you know, big men, the classical big men that can bang with him. I mean, Henson's a foul box in his own right. Griffin's pretty good at getting to the line when he's feeling motivated. I think you'll see high ownership on Blake, and I think it's correct. And I hope that we're a part of it, because that will be, I'm going to make a bet that this is his cheapest price for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a conviction play. And I like that. So I, my guess right now with our good on the shot attempts and usage, and probably a little high in the rebounds, and maybe even a little high in the assist too. So I think the scoring I'm not so worried about, and that's the other stuff that number by number, which we can do, and I probably will end up doing at some point today. Just making sure that those are correct. But otherwise, yeah, I think I'm with you. I think he just is a deal, 7,600, especially if the minutes creep back up into the high 30s, if the game stays close. And Detroit actually is favored, like I said here, which I'm actually a little surprised about. But going the other way, Milwaukee, no real news and notes. Jabari Parker on the back-to-back might sit, so that would actually make a difference, because it would probably open up some of the power forward minutes. Or like they've been playing like small ball five with him at times. So like you could see more minutes out of Henson. Giannis is coming on the back-to-back. That's never really mattered. Giannis is a guy that right now, you know, speaking of guys coming in lineups, he's basically in all FanDuel lineups as of right now. He's coming off an amazing night last night where he's in all DraftKings lineups at 10-5. Do you think we end up with Giannis as kind of like 100% cash game play on both sides, considering the way that some of the lineups are shaking out right now?
Yeah, I think he's a solid play too. You know, again, if you go ahead and look at just all of the big money plays tonight, I think many of them, have their own question marks. So you got Davis going against the Spurs at basically a season high price. That looks pretty scary. Russ against Dallas at, again, around a season high price in a very slow matchup. Harden against LA, some blowout risk, but otherwise that looks like a pretty good spot. You have Giannis against Detroit. Yeah, not a fantastic matchup. And then you really don't have any like classic big money payoff guys after that. You have a cluster of guys, probably overpriced guys around 10,000, and then it just falls off from there. So I think as you're looking to pay up tonight, Giannis seems as good a play as anyone. I'd like to play him and Harden. Right now, our lineups are finding a way to make room for both, given some of the other value that's cropped up already. So I suspect that trend continues and that we wind up with one or both of them, and probably leaning towards Harden if the optimizer. I'm sorry, that's chat speak right there. I'm sorry. What a way to start my 36th year. If the lineup optimizer spits it out, I think it will prioritize Harden, but I like Giannis too.
I felt physically sick when I heard you say that. The the key with Giannis, all you mentioned too, he's just cheaper than all those guys too. So if you figure let's say all things being equal, and he's in just as good of a spot as everybody else, which he's, I would say, you know, arguably a better spot than most of the other guys. He just is, you know, 600 cheaper than Westbrook, 1500 cheaper than Davis. So you are looking at, or we will be looking at a situation where he just ends up becoming kind of a core cash game play. And remember, you know, with Milwaukee, they are firmly in the we need to win pretty much every game camp here. It's not like going to be a total fight for the playoffs in the East, but they are one of the teams that is incentivized to kind of just keep their foot on the gas. So yeah, I think we end up there with Giannis and the other side players for Milwaukee. I mean, I guess Middleton and Bledsoe don't necessarily qualify there. Just to me, seem a little overpriced. Toronto goes in and plays Orlando. Toronto 9.5-point favorite against the Magic here. Toronto, I started to look at tanking teams, and I was trying to look at teams. I ran a couple of queries. How many minutes does a team play their starters, right? Like, do you want to take a guess real quick of what team plays their starters the least amount of minutes?
Oh, the least? Damn, I was going to guess the most was Minnesota.
The most is Minnesota by a mile. Okay. Minnesota is 10% higher than the second place team. It's like not even close.
No, we're going with the least. I'm going to say Brooklyn.
No.
Is it one of the teams that's right about to play, like Orlando?
No, it's Sacramento. Sacramento's 25 minutes. And then Brooklyn third at 26. But then I also looked at teams, you'll see where I'm going with this in a second. Teams where their opponent's starters played, right? Because I was like trying to get a sense of, you know, do some teams favor you know, maybe staying in closer games or like getting blown out. And the team that actually played their starters played the opposing starters played almost the least amount of minutes in the league is Toronto. Right. So like opposing starters just don't play any minutes against Toronto. They play. It's basically tied. It's like it's well, actually,
that just points to them being involved in blowouts more than any other team, basically. Right.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I think that's mostly what it points to, like, because the teams down on this bottom list are teams that typically get blown out, like Orlando's the other team. Orlando and Toronto are tied, sure. Where their opposing starters play the least amount of minutes. I mean, it's apropos not of much, except that I just found it to be kind of interesting. These numbers aren't perfect either, because some teams, like Golden State has a starter at center, and they play the guy 15 minutes, right? So that number's going to drive some of these numbers all the way down. But you get two teams that are involved in an inordinate amount of blowouts here in Toronto and Orlando. The line is already pretty high. Toronto, like we said, has kind of just blown people out a lot this year. Does that make it – are we getting so close to just avoiding kind of both of these teams at this point, but kind of for different reasons?
Yeah, I think so. I think you spelled out a pretty good case for it. I wasn't going to be excited about this game regardless. We've talked about it at length now, but Toronto – basically has two players that can somewhat reliably hit their minutes. Those players, Lowry and DeRozan, still are at the whim of whether it's a blowout or not in any given game. Orlando, just happy to go out there and get blown out at any given time. Like they have a very erratic sense of who they want to play minutes. You know, when the going gets tough, they just retreat and give up completely. So I'm happy to not roster anyone from this game on a big slate.
I think we are going to, I think in maybe less than a week, we get a value on some of these Magic guys because they did start to tick up their starter minutes last game. I just don't think this is going to be it because I think they're just going to lose. So
even if they lose by just 10 or 5 or something, it's still just a bad matchup. Like Toronto plays slow and they play excellent defense. So why do you want to play, I don't know, Jonathan Simmons went off last game, but he played just as many minutes against Philadelphia and scored 21 fantasy points. Like I just don't know what you're trying to get away with by sneaking guys in from this game.
Totally agree. And they're going to probably end up ticking up Vooch's and Gordon's minutes a little bit. And, you know, that ticks down some of the other starters too, because those guys are pretty high usage. Indiana goes in and plays the Hawks. Indiana 4.5-point favorites over Atlanta. Atlanta's definitely in the tank shuffle here. They kind of come up with that list of teams that play their starters with the least amount of minutes. They kind of work on both ends. Their starters don't play any minutes, and their opponent's starters don't play any minutes either. But you know, this game does project to be a little bit closer. Atlanta is typically a pretty good matchup. They sat out a bunch of guys last game, like in their backcourt, but it looks like they're going to get Delaney back. It didn't end up completely mattering. John Collins was a crazy chalk start, like 80% when he played, did kind of underperform there. Anything you like that stands out to you about this game? I feel like there should be something I see, and I'm just not sure I totally see it just in terms of like the way the rest of the slate breaks down.
Yeah, well, for starters, I think players going both ways have upside here. You pointed to this, but both teams are pretty good matchups for opposing DFS players. We see, you know, especially teams going up against Atlanta, you'll see them, you know, kind of flirt towards the top of things like, you know, fantasy points allowed to opposing centers and so forth. So let's start with Atlanta, because I think they have fewer attractive plays to me here. At power forward and center, they just don't really have a strict plan as to play anyone, quote unquote, starters minutes. Like even when things are kind of breaking right, it's not surprising to see Deadman or Collins play, you know, 25 to 30 minutes, kind of disappear on you there. Prince is a guy that we've seen flash huge upside. I mean, he just did this against LA, scored 40 fantasy points, and it looked easy for him, but it's always going to look easy when a scoring first guy is scoring, right? And that is when things look easy. And when things are going rough, the scoring isn't there. He can lose minutes. He can also just be out there doing nothing too. So just understand that you're taking on some risk there. Probably not a guy you want to play in your cash games if you can at all avoid it. And then, you know, between like Bazemore and Schroeder, the other two starters, Bazemore is just a continuation of the Collins and Deadman thing. The minutes are very questionable. Schroeder, I suppose, is the most playable guy, but again, the minutes are a concern and the performances too. So unfortunately, with a good matchup for Atlanta, I'm not really seeing a whole lot I like here. I don't know if you see anything else from Indiana going the other way.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did play the starters a lot of minutes. Thad, Bogdan, or Bojan, Turner, and Corey Joseph all played a ton last game against Dallas in a game they lost to Dallas, in a game that Dallas definitely did not want to win. But and Oladipo got in the foul trouble, so he got completely buzzed off his minutes. He only ended up playing 23. I mean, if you keep seeing the concentrated minutes on the starters, specifically the big guys, I think they're is there something of a value? And without getting completely, totally excited about it, I mean, Thad at 6,300, if you thought he's going to hit 35 minutes, sure. I think that's completely fine. Bogdanovich is a guy when he's coming like in the $4,500 range on FanDuel, I'm kind of start to pay attention. 5,100 seems a little too expensive, I think, for him. And then Turner, you know, I like Turner a lot. And if I thought Turner was going to play 33 or 34 minutes every game, then this would be a great spot for him. That's just is not the case. So that's kind of like my summary thoughts on the Pacers. Turner's the one specifically. Like, I think he played 35 minutes last game. If we could reasonably give him something like 33, I think he'd be like an excellent play at 7,000 here. And I just don't. That happens less than it actually happens. So I just don't think it's safe at all. And then Oladipo's just too expensive. All right, moving.
It's also, just a quick note too before we move on. Vegas calls this a 4.5 point game Indiana's way. They have like twice as many wins as the Hawks this season. It's right. Just like the spreads this year have been kind of weird. I think it's difficult for Vegas to figure out, like, you know, is this the same Atlanta team that has gone 18-43, or is this some slightly better version of it? So I don't know. Worth keeping an eye on the fact that spread is really tight for two teams that have performed very differently.
Yeah. Charlotte goes in and plays Boston. The injury news that we're going to pay attention to here is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist left the game early last night, did not return, had a hamstring issue. And then my guess is he doesn't play. He's listed a doubtful right now. Jeremy Lamb ended up being the spot fill in there. Now he's a guy that does come in off the bench and plays, you know, somewhat reliable minutes, and actually could enter the starting lineup tonight. Not the cheapest guy in the world, but I think we're in a spot where could we see it's a bad matchup, but do you think we could see like 30 something minutes out of a guy like Lamb here? And if so, does he end up kind of coming in as one of the better value plays?
Yeah, I love Lamb. Every time he's filled in to the starting lineup, he's been excellent for the most part. Kind of, we talked about rating punts out in the past, trying to figure out which ones to prioritize. If you look at Lamb's game log, he's already paying 5x points per dollar on this price, you know, basically with regularity on low 20s minutes. If that goes up into the 30s, again, he's just a really, really reliable source of scoring and assists, and can rebound the ball as well too. So yeah, I really like Lamb as a punt play, and really hope that we wind up getting the opportunity to run him out there, even in a tough matchup.
I only have him at 27 minutes right now, and he's basically coming in all the lineups. I think if he was confirmed the starter, you'd see him as on both sites, just the highest owned player on the slate. It would be my guess. Yeah. I think people are pretty on to this kind of idea about punts, and Jeremy Lamb is a guy that has filled this exact punt role in the past with people. So I think that is not going to be something that just people gloss over. And I think we're going to have clear word on it, just judging by the time of the game at 7:30. So with MKG listed doubtful now, I'm not so worried about it. Boston going the other way. It's not a bad matchup here against Charlotte. And Boston is just another one of these teams that, you know, this Brown and Tatum don't ever play like more than 32 minutes, basically. They've been rotating that center spot at times, like in the starter role. So as you can't really kind of grab onto anything there. They're just kind of an unexciting DFS team, unless they're like in the perfect matchup and they're on a run of where guys have ticked down like 10% in price. I mean, do you agree with that assessment about Boston? I feel like it's a team that we don't really pay all that much attention to when it comes to DFS.
Yeah, I think that's probably my assessment as well. I think there's, you know, some potential sneaky upside here if you want to target big tournaments. One note on this game is that Dwight Howard's status is a little bit uncertain here. In case you missed it, Howard basically didn't play the second quarter in his last game, came out, still wind up filling it up, having a really good DFS performance. But there's some murmurings that he might wind up sitting tonight. If he does, I think I actually like Al Horford going the other way. I'm not sure how much actually opportunity it creates on the big man end for Charlotte. I think they spread it out a lot. We would really want to get some news there. Cody Zeller's banging up himself. But if Horford's up against, you know, say like Frank Kaminsky, or they have to move Marvin Williams to the five, or, you know, who knows what would happen, then I think you could wind up getting some value there. But now, unfortunately, I think Boston falls right into that unexciting camp, especially on a big slate.
Yeah, my guess is Howard plays. Like, he disappeared for that second quarter. There was no word about what was going on with him. And then he just kind of came back and played. And I was watching the second half of the game. He looked fine. My guess is he plays. I actually don't even mind Horford, even if Howard plays. He's very cheap on FanDuel. $6,500 is a pretty nice price for him. And that price is driven down. Like, he's been in the $7,500 range and kind of can get there at times. So I actually don't really mind. There's a chance we would play him even if Howard played. I'm actually not even positive he guards Howard because I think he kind of plays more of the four when they start with like the Baines at center kind of thing. He probably doesn't even draw that part of the interior defense. Anyway, let's go into Phoenix and Memphis. You know, always a team that, you know, two teams that we've actually, well, Phoenix specifically targeted a lot on both sides of the ball, obviously, because one, the way they've been playing their starters, and then two, whoever their opponent is usually where we want to get some money. And now Phoenix, they've continued to concentrate minutes on Booker, Warren, and Elfrid Payton. Now Alex Len has started and played pretty terribly over the short term here, and then they have Dragan Bender, and they don't really play him. So really, those core three guys of Booker, Warren, and Payton. It's a bad matchup here against Memphis, but I still feel like these guys are still kind of coming on a little bit of the cheaper side. Again, it's not that it's almost the worst matchup, and this is pushing it because these are guys we played pretty heavily over the short term. But what are your thoughts on still maybe playing these Suns even in a slow matchup against the Grizzlies?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to a price and opportunity mismatch on some of them. I think if you're getting, you know, outsized opportunity at a bargain price, then you're always going to consider it. I think Warren, you know, it's kind of tricky with him for me and for Booker too, frankly, because the price has come up. I get that the performance has been there, but, you know, the Phoenix always does feel like kind of like a bubble waiting to pop when they're actually performing somewhat well. No desire to win this game, but they are playing these guys tons of minutes. So it's nice if you're going to take a team like this that you're basically paying all time high prices for. It's nice to take them in a matchup against a team that has the same number of wins as them. That being said, I don't know. I'm not going to feel amazing paying basically 1,100 more for each of these guys than I did the last time I played them a couple of days ago in a matchup against the league's slowest team, right? I don't know if you feel differently, but I'm not over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer. It's definitely closer. The games like this are interesting too because this puts the old tanking thing to the test. The teams that the Suns have played in the short term have not been wanting to lose. Mm-hmm. I mean, they played New Orleans, they played Portland. Those teams have wanted to win the games. Utah, Memphis also doesn't want to win. So you always get into a weird spot of like where you're going to end up. Just kind of where you're going to end up with minutes when both teams are actively trying to lose. Memphis going the other way, and they did start Jarrell Martin and Jamichael Green together, even with Gasol back last game, which I thought was interesting. And they played him a lot of minutes. Really all the starters played a lot of minutes for Memphis. This is the perfect matchup for when you're talking about DFS purposes. Really bad defense. Phoenix still, even with the addition of Payton, their pace has maintained, so they're still playing at a very fast pace, and he's not much of a defender anyway, so it wasn't going to make a difference. And Len is a clear defensive downgrade over Tyson Chandler for whatever other problems Chandler has. So the Phoenix is still just really the perfect matchup here. I mean, stacking guys like Martin and Green together, I mean, Andrew Harrison, because it looks like Wayne Selden is going to, and Tyreke Evans are going to miss again. How much exposure do we want to have to the Grizzlies?
I'll take plenty of exposure to the Grizzlies. I think Harrison, really, really solid option here. He was good in both the Miami game and the Boston game. Two very bad matchups for opposing point guards with blowout risk there. So taking him in what amounts to the league's best matchup for opposing point guards seems like a good deal to me. I get that we're paying more for him, but this is the type of situation where I'm happy to pay a little bit more. You know, those big men, Martin and Green, seem like okay options to me. You know, Green has been getting there. You know, the performance has been sort of up and down, but overall the minutes seem pretty secure. So I think I'm happy to play him. Martin's a little bit closer for me. I don't know what you think about Martin, but he strikes me as a guy who's often sort of the odd man out. And, you know, he's out there on the court, but not really touching the ball that much. Even at 4,100, I don't know if I would be super excited about playing him.
Yeah, no, that small forward position specifically for Memphis can really just completely disappear at times too. Yeah. I don't know if it's like just a system thing or whatever it is. And Martin is just not, he's shown flashes of fantasy upside, but more often than not, he has a pretty long track record of being a very low points per minute kind of player anyway. The thing with him is just coming very cheap. Mostly it's that he's 4,100 in a good matchup in mid-30s minutes at specifically FanDuel, where power forward is often so difficult to just find one good player that you want to play, sure, much less two. So I think that's where Martin ends up filling the need. I think between the two of them, I'd rather play Green, obviously, but he's just 1,000 more, and that price difference just might end up being the final determining factor. Andrew Harrison at 6,000, I can see why I do it, and I just I really don't want to do it.
Well, you're scary. Kinda... We've established this many times on the podcast. You're just kind of a scaredy cat. So,
just Andrew Harrison. Andrew Harrison just has full disappear style in him at times. But I get the reasoning behind it, and I still think it probably is a path to kind of walk down. Golden State goes in and plays Washington. The Wiz are on the back-to-back here. Golden State, 9-point favorites on the road. So there's some blowout risk even, you know, kind of traveling across the country and playing Washington here. I mean, I don't know. One of the age-old questions we have with the Warriors is sort of where to set their minutes, right? Like there's games, yep. You know, when they play Houston at home or whatever, then you're fine kind of setting them at their, I don't know, quote unquote max minutes, like where they show up when they, you know, things are kind of correct. And then, you know, when they play Sacramento and they're 15-point favorites, you tick them down to, you know, give Curry like 33 minutes or something like that, 32 minutes, because you're just not going to play 37 in a game. They're going to wipe the floor with that. What kind of, where does this game kind of land for you in the Golden State minutes? Because that's really the only question with them on a night to night basis is how much we can trust that they're going to play. They're going to play their starters in the fourth quarter.
I think you trust them here. Washington's a good team. I got the Golden State's favored by 8.5 here. Washington, 11 games over 500 this season. 8.5, it's a decent amount, but I pointed this out before. If Vegas sees a team winning by 8.5 and they scored an average amount of points each quarter, then the Golden State would be up by like 6 points going into the fourth quarter. Now, of course, it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes they're up by 15, they sit their starters and the other team claws back in or whatever. But I think overall 8.5 is not enough to make me shy off, especially given that Washington is a team with playoff hopes here. So they don't really have any incentive to give up early or to throw in the towel. So Golden State this season, also, it's worth noting, is a public team. They're performing 4 games behind the spread this season. So against the spread, they're 28-32, meaning that they often are getting a little bit of a bump, probably for people just liking them. So the spread seems just a hair high for me, and I will be assuming that those guys will play their full run minutes.
Yeah, and then Washington, they'll play the starters, a decent amount of minutes, not a ton. They do play some rotations. We talked about these guys yesterday in that they have all, in the post John Wall world, have all just kind of come to their correct prices, I think. Their prices are fully corrected on based on the new opportunity without, well, it's not even new, but the opportunity without Wall. So I don't know. And Golden State, while a fast-paced matchup, and this game has a lot of points, it strikes me as, you know, a guy like Beal has big tournament upside if you think that he's the primary reason they stick in the game. Like, you need the two things to happen, right? Like, you need him to score a lot, and that will then facilitate them staying in the game. They've shown the ability for some other guys to score, like Porter, and even Oubre has, you know, scored okay, and Satoransky has played well. So I don't think you definitely just do this binary Beal is the only reason they're able to stick against Golden State. But I think that if you're putting together lineups with guys from Washington, you want to kind of stack it both ways and hope that it gets into a crazy shootout where the Wiz can kind of just hang. I think that's really,
I don't mind that. I think it's worth noting on the Warriors, though, that they're very different based on which position you're squaring off against. And while we've pointed out the issues with defense versus position stats many times on this podcast in the past, they have allowed the 5th most fantasy points to opposing shooting guards per game this year. And Beal should have the ball in his hands a lot, almost regardless, because Golden State does feature some very tough defenders at other positions. And then the other spot where you could potentially punish Golden State is when they go small. You can sometimes try to punish them at center. Washington doesn't really have a great way to punish them at center, so I suspect this will be a game that where Washington attempts to feature Beal. I wouldn't be upset with playing Beal really in any kind of format tonight, again, because I'm just going to be operating under the assumption that this game stays at a point where, you know, Beal's playing meaningful minutes and not just playing garbage time.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So when you look at Beal then, they're around the same price. Would you feel better about playing Beal or Booker in considering like their matchups and sort of their profiles and what they're kind of going up against? Their $200 difference on FanDuel.
Yeah, I'd rather play Beal.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I probably agree with you, and I'd be worried that the downside is there. But I mean, like I said, it's the Suns and the downside's there with those guys kind of all the time.
Beal has outscored Booker on a per game basis this season. And you know that they're both of their roles have been somewhat steady, except for Beal, you could argue, spent more of his time in a worse role when Wall was around. So I'll take Beal, and it's a better matchup too with Golden State rather than Memphis. So yeah, I think all signs point to Beal for me. Other than if you look at the last 5 games, that favors Booker. But you know, just like we talked about, and I think this is also, you know, something that was probably worth pointing out earlier when we were discussing Blake. You know, we talked about this yesterday on the podcast with Lillard. It's like, you don't want to, the time where you want to play guys is when they haven't necessarily been lighting the world on fire. So, you know, if Booker's lighting the world on fire now, has anything really fundamentally changed? Well, not really. Like, he's been playing these high 30 minutes for a while. It's just now he has back-to-back games of 47 and 62 fantasy points. So I am off the Booker train. And when I look before the All-Star break and he's scoring 31 fantasy points a game, seems expensive. On the Beal train. Let's go.
The OKC goes in and plays Dallas. OKC five-point favorites here. Dallas, a pretty slow matchup, all things considered. They've shown their willingness to sort of want to tanker. I mean, they came out and basically said it, and Cuban got fined for it. But, they basically stuck to that plan. They've rounded out a couple of the starters' minutes. Westbrook, we mentioned him before. Obviously, anytime he's on a slate, you want to consider him. And we talked about maybe the reasons why it might be better to take some savings on Giannis. Is he still in play tonight, or based on the existence here of Giannis and then Harden in the game we're going to get to near the end? Do you think Westbrook ends up sort of becoming an odd man out price wise just because of the other options in the matchup?
Yeah, I think you spelled it out. Not an amazing matchup. And Westbrook, you don't even really get the benefit of the game logs going his way recently, too. So I think he'll be pretty low owned, and for good reason. I'm not going to play Westbrook tonight if I can avoid it. And there's also, like, I'm okay with some of the point guard options, too, the other point guard options. And while Westbrook, I do think, has a pretty high floor on these prices, nah, I'm not going to bother.
Dallas did switch up their starting lineup last game, where they started Dwight Powell over JJ Barea, and they played Powell and Dirk together. And so they did their starting lineup was Dennis Smith, Wes Matthews, Barnes, Dirk, and Dwight Powell. Powell played 33 minutes. Now, in some ways, I want to give him those minutes again. And the game before, with no other things changing, they just switched the starting lineup, and Barea was in that starting role. It seems like they're just playing matchups at this point with their starters. When that's the case, and we didn't have word, are you comfortable taking a stab at a guy like Powell? Giving him maybe 30 minutes because you think he's gonna stick in the starting lineup, or is it too risky because of the way they've gone back and forth with their starting lineup, specifically in this one position? The rest of the guys are pretty are kind of locked into their spot, but this last position is one that they've switched around a lot just overall over the course of the season. They started Kleber there for a while. Obviously, I just said they started Barea and now Powell. Do we want to take a guess on who's going to fill that spot, or you just need to get definitive word before you kind of threw a guy into a lineup?
Yeah, I just don't want to be in the mind reading business, I don't think. If I get definitive word, I could even nudge it Powell's way. But even still, like, it seems like in any given game, the plan is generally to pay him around 26 to 28 minutes. And I know that the very last game he played 32 to 33. And that's obviously like a welcome sign. You'd just as soon him do that rather than play 26 minutes. But I'm not ready to move the needle on him until we get some sort of sustained track record of minutes there, even if it's just two games. I think if we can see two consecutive games, I'll feel a little bit better on it. But again, like, if I can compare him to Jermichael Green, Jermichael Green being basically the same price at him in a much better matchup with a much more secure role, to my estimation, I'd just rather play Green. And I don't think you need to play both. So I think I'm not going to be playing him for cash.
Nerlens Noel back too. I don't think it really matters, but he's sat for a really extended period of time in sort of this like weird injury contract negotiation thing. Again, I don't think it matters, but just worth throwing out that
it mattered enough for you to mention playing, which I understand.
New Orleans is going to play San Antonio. San Antonio is 4.5-point favorites. It looks like Pau Gasol is going to miss this game. Anthony Davis obviously been on a complete tear going the other way there for the Pelicans as they still try to fight for that final playoff spot in the West. Does the matchup against Davis, this guy we've considered pretty consistently over the short term, and he has two 96-point fantasy games in his last three games. So it's tough to get much better than that. And this seems like the kind of the worst matchup at his peak price. Where do we stand on Davis? I mean, do we kind of already sum it up in our Giannis thoughts here? Is this just the wrong kind of matchup to pay a peak price for, or are we still not totally grasping about what his fantasy upside is? Because considering the short-term performance has been as good, I mean, historically good, basically, in like a 2 out of 3-game stretch.
And I mean, if you go to the 2 out of 3 games before the All-Star break, he scored 82, 59, 91 fantasy points in those three games. So, yeah, this is a case where I'm willing to listen that we're entering into a new normal for Davis. Like, you know, you could argue that he didn't quite come into his own after Boogie went down. And not that we were expecting 80 fantasy points a game or anything after that happened, but I'm certainly willing to listen that what we were seeing prior to this big run-up in the last six games for him wasn't really indicative of where he would land. With Davis, you always get the caveat of, you know, potential injury risk or potentially missing out on a few minutes for whatever reason. But right now, the performance is just simply through the roof. Like, you can't play any better than Anthony Davis is playing right now. Do I want to play him against the Spurs when I have other reasonable big money options at an all-time high price? I don't think so. I think I can get more safety elsewhere, but that's not to say that I won't hop right on the bandwagon almost regardless of the next matchup. It's just that the Spurs matchup is just so bad for a couple of reasons. You know, not only are the Spurs really, really good defensively, they also play dirt slow too, you know, 29th in the league in terms of pace with one of the best defenses. So I think without outside of a league worst matchup and an all-time high price, I'd probably be more excited here, but I suspect some people will roll the dice.
Yeah, I mean, that game log is just absolutely ridiculous. It's just it's
pretty ridiculous.
Like I wonder if there has been a better stretch, like a better just like sustained stretch or actually just raw points put up over a 5-game stretch or a 6-game stretch or whatever. I can't imagine there has been, right? I mean, like just to almost hit 100.
Not in my memory. Maybe yeah. Westbrook, like just after Durant went down when they were on the same team, but I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, but he wasn't hitting like 90s like consistently. Like, not that Davis hits.
He wasn't hitting 90s consistently. That's true.
That's like, it's so nuts.
You got me.
and I put you on the spot and then put you down. The Spurs without Gasol are a little tough to figure here because last game Gasol sat, Bertans started, but then Bertans played 1 minute last game. Like, so the last game Gasol missed, Bertans started and played a lot of minutes. But then that's just the last Spurs game that they played, Bertans didn't play at all. Rudy Gay is back now. This is a later game. I'm not sure we know the starting lineup here. This is a weird spot for me because I think without Gay or Bertans was still coming off the bench, I'd feel kind of comfortable running him out there as it was one of the starters. And that just doesn't seem like something you can count on at this point. They've also switched their starting lineup up now where Deontay Murray and Patty Mills is playing the two guard with the starters and playing somewhere in the 30 minutes. And what are your thoughts on the Spurs? They're a weird team because they kind of switched things up completely. And this is also a very good matchup because the Pelicans are not good on defense. I feel like there's something for us here. And I'm a little distrustful of the way they've been running out some of the rotations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by Mills, to be honest, like 33 and 35 minutes in the last two games. My eyeball test tells me that he can run the point and kind of like, you know, create on offense in a pretty effective way. So I think I do like him there. Murray, it's a little bit expensive and it seems a little bit driven by, you know, some recent defensive stats. And, you know, we've seen him put up some defensive numbers in the past, but not really like this. You know, 7 defensive stats against Cleveland, 5 against Denver. I think that seems like, you know, more smoke than fire to me. I still think Aldridge, you know, he's a guy that for whatever reason, when he shows up in lineups, like I feel fine about it. Everyone else is just terrified. We played him against Denver and he was 2% played in cash games and he was really, really good. So I'm okay with Aldridge if he shows up. Outside of that, you know, even guys like Gasol who will get there when the minutes are there, the minutes come and go, you know, 20, 25, 30, all of that's in play. So I just assume not do that. And yeah, you already talked about small forward. I think that seems like a guessing game until things get a little bit more stabilized.
Yeah, just to go back to Mills, I'm very encouraged that the plan is to play him. I think they just like what they've got. At times, Patty Mills has moved into the starting lineup strictly as the point guard, and it's been underwhelming because that's just really not where his game is driven, right? Exactly right. Like when he's like the primary ball handler here, they have him with Murray is more the ball handler and him playing like the strict too. I think he still needs to score, which is always a little scary. I don't like that out of like playing from a point guard perspective, like in a roster construction thing, because there's a lot of other point guards that just do a lot of other different things. And so when you're very scoring dependent, it can get into a weird standard deviation thing. That being said, if the minutes are going to stick here in the mid 30s, then he's like almost a must play on FanDuel at 4,700, yeah. Not completely, but very, very close. And hopefully we get some kind of starting lineup. I think hearing what the starting lineup is going to be, if Gasol were to sit, could push a difference maker in one way or the other. And it's too early to really say what that's going to be. And I totally agree with you on Aldridge. I think this is a fantastic spot for him. I wish he was just like a little bit cheaper because I think I'd rather if he was like 300 less or something like that, it would make the discussion between Aldridge and Blake a little, I feel much better with Aldridge than I would with Blake here. I think, but the pricing difference does kind of, I don't know, unsettle that. Final game, 10:30 game. So we're going to have a long gap between 8:30 and 10:30 to wait for the lineups to sort of just round out here. But Houston goes in and plays the Clippers. This game has the second highest line of the day after Golden State and Washington. Houston is a 6.5-point favorite over Los Angeles. The news, so a couple relevant pieces of news and notes here. One is that Eric Gordon it looks like he's going to play. He was sick and is back in. Although, and whatever, I don't know if they all got mono or something like that, because now Capella's sick and he's not going to play, or excuse me, he's questionable to play. With illnesses are weird ones, because those are ones that kind of, it depends how you feel toward game time. And we're going to be, and this game is 3.5 hours after a lineup lock. So I think there's a very good chance we do not know about Capella's status going into, I mean, unless he just woke up this morning and feels great, but I think we do not know about Capella's status. And Ryan Anderson's out. Brandon Wright doesn't really matter, but he's out as well. Where do we want to, I mean, if we don't, let's say we have no news here on the Rockets, where do we want to land on some of, one, their starting lineup stuff, because Capella is a big piece of that. And two, how much exposure do we want to this game if there was some uncertainty on the Houston side? And then we can get into the Clippers in a second too.
Yeah, it is a tricky spot with Capella missing, because he has been playing very reliable minutes for them out of the center position recently. We did see Tarik Black fill in, not really play a ton of minutes. I mean, he played 18 minutes against Utah. He could fill in and, you know, wind up playing more minutes, but he's always been sort of an unexciting fill-in to me. He's 3,600, so super, super cheap. But with a team like Houston, like I just don't know that you necessarily know what the plan is going to wind up being. So I'm not sure that that's where you want to land. You know, like I could see them in a game like this going a little bit smaller, you know, rolling Mbah Mute out there, who's a pretty reasonable defender. Jordan's pretty unlikely to punish you going the other way too. So I don't know, the center situation, while Capella does create a big void there, I'm not sure that there's like an obvious benefactor that's just going to step in and put up big DFS numbers for us.
I think that we can still, regardless of where Capella status, and I think, you know, Capella, like I said, if he was cleared to play and just was saying he was fine, I think we could give him a decent amount of minutes and he might end up being a value. Yeah, I still think playing Harden, I think Harden, you'll see him as something of a chalk play in this game. It would be interesting to see where people allocate their big money dollars. I think Giannis, just because he's cheaper, will be up there, but it'll be interesting to see the decisions people make. Basically, I think between Harden, Davis, and Westbrook, I think I would lean going Harden and Giannis. Our system kind of, I'm leaning that way because that's where our system's going. I think I'd just be fine with it. But that'll be one to kind of explore as we get a little bit closer to lock. The Clippers looks like they're going to be without Gallo again. Tyrone Wallace drew the start last night. They played really weird minutes last night. Now the Clippers ended up winning, but they played their starters didn't play at all. It was a very, very weird game. Like Harris barely played. I'm looking real quick. Yeah, they started Wesley Johnson. He barely played. That's not a huge. He's like the stopgap for when they bring Lou Williams in. But Harris only played 29 minutes. Rivers only played 29 minutes. Wallace played 31, and then Lou Williams played 36. And they played Teodosic and Harrell off the bench a little more. Are you worried at all when you see this kind of minutes redistribution? And it was a close game too, so it wasn't like the game was a blowout or anything. They won by 2 points. It looks like they maybe just got stuck in a rotational thing. But we talked yesterday about how confident we were giving the Clippers, like starters specifically, tons of minutes, and then they went right the opposite. What are your feelings here on the Clippers?
Yeah, well, I think the Clippers, the one guy's role who's safe on the Clippers is actually ironically Lou off the bench. I think they recognize that he is just their main offensive weapon right now. So I think you'll see him come out there and play his 36, 35 minutes, assuming the game stays close. I think there is increased risk for minutes for bench guys sometimes. But in Williams' case, he's also the main means they have to catch up should they fall behind. So I actually think he's safer than it might appear. On the same note, I don't know that you really want to play guys like Tobias Harris or like any of these other guys whose minutes fluctuated, because sure, they were playing somewhat reliable minutes prior to this. But the fact that that's in them, you know, a close game where they dip down, I think we have to offer a pretty aggressive downward guidance on their minutes projection, which obviously impacts their overall performance as well. The one potential thing I guess I'll note is in a game, I know that it was close, but in a game with a perceived easier opponent in Denver, maybe they were just kind of like, you know, trying to give guys a little bit of rest on the front end of a back-to-back, but maybe that's stretching a little bit too. It's always, again, so hard to know how teams are going to handle the psychology of back-to-backs, you know, why they're taking guys out and putting different guys in different matchups. That's just something we can't really know, and you can't even often rely on coaches to give you a straightforward answer there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was watching this game and I kind of turned it off in the end of the third quarter, but if I was to look back and perceive what happened, it looks like the furious fourth quarter comeback that they made last night was probably on the back of the rotation that was in there, which was like Harrell.
Sure, and they just leave him.
And they just left him in, yeah. And Boban actually played 15 minutes last night. Boban did a classic. Boban, 15 minutes, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and an assist, and a block in 15 minutes. So I don't know if you end up seeing more Boban. This guy's just so ridiculous. This guy's the greatest fantasy points per minute thing that's ever he's been like genetically made to just score fantasy points per minute and then simply just can't get on the court. And when he does, he scores, I don't know, I'm not going to add this up right now, but this is like probably 30 something points in 15 minutes. So I wouldn't trust that's going to be the plan going forward. Definitely, almost definitely not against the Rockets, but still fun to see that he can just get in there and just be his 7'10" self or whatever he is and just kind of swat everything away and score kind of at will. All right. Well, hopefully we have some of that with some more of the injury news before the 7 o'clock lock, but I'm not completely positive. We're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NBA is the site. Go over and check out a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, free for 3 days. And then just $34.95 a month after that includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. We'll be back again on Friday talking more hoops, buddy. Your birthday.
Happy birthday to me.